Hey guys, welcome back to the Tea and Ball podcast. It's with me today, your host Jay, and also with my co-host here, Will. How are you today, Will? You well?
I'm very good, thank you, Jay. How are you?
I'm not bad, my friend. If anything, it's brightened up my day. Scores last night, what did you think?
I was surprised. I had Liverpool to beat Brighton 5-0 on the podcast yesterday. So, to see Alzate score that goal in Dartmouth.
How ironic was it that we was talking about how good Souček is, and also on the podcast after ours with Fletcherton and DC, which guys should listen to also. It's just so funny how he was really rating him and he scores again. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it was a good finish as well. It was a great finish. But a bit of a mental stat for you. Jurgen Klopp has never lost two in a row at Anfield. Yesterday was the first time.
Crazy. I mean, did it go on that crazy run as well where they didn't lose since 2018 and now two in a row?
So it was 68 games unbeaten at home. The last game they lost at home was to Crystal Palace in 2017. And it was Crystal Palace. They beat them 3-1. And then after that, they went 68 games unbeaten. So they've now done two in a row. And Klopp's never done that. So is it a decline, you know?
I think it is. And it was a weird squad selection. But I was talking to my other Liverpool friend today. And he was going, no, Jay, you're ignoring the facts here. The squad selection wasn't the problem. What was the problem was they was trying to whip balls in non-stop. Funny enough, just like Arsenal currently do.
Yeah.
And their tallest guy that they've got is Jordan Henderson. And he's playing in defence.
Yeah.
So basically, they're relying on Salah to head it. And Salah comes out and he goes, that's literally the weakest part of my game.
Yeah.
Heading, you know. So no idea why they was trying to whip balls in. It was, just don't do that.
No, it was a strange one.
Trent's having a terrible season as well. Robertson's not been on his top form, but Trent's been atrocious in my point of view. Maybe he set the bar that high.
It was a strange one. I was watching Liverpool at the weekend when they were playing. Well, they played you guys, didn't they? They played Spurs.
Yeah.
And obviously, you scored in the first couple of minutes with Heung-Min Son, didn't you? And those first 20 minutes, it looked like Trent was poorly. He looked ill. Like, he wasn't tracking back. He wasn't moving forward. He was sort of stagnant on the halfway line, panting, puffing away. And I'm looking at him thinking, what's gone off with him this season? Last season, he looked like the best right-back in the world last season. And something's happened this year. I don't know if it's got to his head or if he thinks he's a better player or believes he's a better player than what he actually probably is. But he's just not looked right this year.
No, it isn't. Just while we're here as well, and before we continue, I think we both would like to put out a massive thank you to the support we got for yesterday's podcast.
100%.
We're getting guys from South Africa, Philippines, the US, and obviously our massive UK following. So for me and Will, just a massive thank you. We're joint top now for the most successful podcast we've currently done on the episodes, at least anyway. So now we're joint top, guys. So thank you so much for the support yesterday.
I can't wait to words to our fans. What did you say? Sorry, mate.
Sorry, yeah. Any words to the fans?
Just want to say a huge thank you. Podcasting is something that I've always wanted to sort of get involved with. I'm very opinionated. Jay approached me and said, you know, you've always got your views on football. And it was nice, you know, to receive some messages as well from people to say, I agree with you. You know, really, really good podcast. Really appreciate it. Even people who don't know football were listening to it, and they were saying, even though we didn't understand everything, it was a really good listen to. So, thank you ever so much. You know, there's only one way that we can continue to grow, and that's with your support. So it does mean a lot every single time we get a new subscriber or a new listener or a new country coming into the equation. It really, really does mean a lot, and it makes all of this hard work worth it.
Now, we've obviously set the Facebook group up as well. Yep. If people are looking to join us, it's TN Bull. Now, just let people know as well, we are building content on here, but me and Will will be going to YouTube shortly.
Yes.
So keep an eye out. We're looking to do this, guys. full time within the year. We really need your support. So please listen out, you know. And again, from the bottom of our hearts, we're eternally grateful, and we will push this, I promise you. If you've got any subjects as well that you wish for me and Will to discuss, we're more than happy. Just give us a message on the podcast or within the group and we'll discuss them. Like you said, there's a couple of people who's messaged us who really want to be involved in what we're doing and supporting. So the next podcast will actually be on a different subject. Will, if you want to just have a quick briefing of what our next podcast will be about.
So, throughout the pandemic, I've been working for the NHS 111 service for a contracted company. And I wanted to sort of give you the word from the horse's mouth on the whole COVID-19 subject and what the NHS have been doing, some facts that we know working for the NHS. And also to sort of put to bed some myths that you may have heard.
I don't know about a lot of conspiracy.
Yeah, I don't know about you, Jay, but you only need to log into Facebook and there's the foil hat warriors who are running around spouting nonsense about COVID-19. So yeah. I'm going to try and put words to write and give you guys a full breakdown of what I know that is from official sources with the British Health Service. And yeah, that should be an interesting one for me.
There'll be quite a few controversial topics on the next episode. So yeah, that's just a quick review, guys. We'll do a more detailed approach later. Yeah. And we'll go back to the football one right now. So we was talking about Trent saying he's either been superbly amazing before and now we're seeing the play that he always was, or he was being average, or alternatively, he's just having a bit of dip and fall.
Yeah.
Like all players do when he's coming back. Which one do you think that is, Will?
I think with Trent, he started very young, didn't he? He came into the squad as a budding teenager. And he, you know, Micah Richards said to Roy Keane, burst onto the scene. And he did, Micah Richards, to be fair to him. But with Trent, it really was a burst onto the scene. He took the Premier League by storm. His first season in the Champions League, he looked like he'd been there 5 or 6 years. You know, for a young lad, he was such a mature player. He was very calm on the ball. He wasn't rash in his tackles, which is what you tend to find with younger defenders. They're so keen on pleasing the manager and pleasing the fans that they can make very, very silly decisions. A Southampton player did it the other night, didn't he? I believe that you know, he was new to the squad. And within 2 minutes, he's put in a horrific challenge and got himself sent off. And you see it all too often with young defenders. And Trent never showed that. Now, I we could be harsh singly picking out Trent here, because I don't think the whole Liverpool squad have been up to par this season, if I'm being quite honest with you. But I think Trent is a very easy target because of the buzz around him that there's been on social media. Mm-hmm. You know, Liverpool fans are not shy of giving you their opinion on Trent. I personally think that it is just a dip in form. Mm-hmm. I think he's had a very intense three seasons with, what, two Champions League finals and a Premier League win. That's a lot for a young lad.
Well, just a quick recap. Sorry to interrupt. No, you're fine, mate. I've just seen a bit of an update as we've been online today. Mm-hmm. And last night, actually, mm-hmm. they've now deducted mm-hmm. Bednarek's red card. The FA accepts that they was wrong with the Bednarek's red card, but not David Luiz's. Now, due to that, he will be available for the Newcastle trip after the club was successful in appealing the red card. Now, it's very weird, this one, because even though they accept it was a red card, they can't take the 9-0 back. No. You know, I think that's very weird how they do stuff like this, the FA. Whilst they also went to the monitor as well.
Yeah.
So he was actually wrong, was the VAR assistant.
This is it. This is an interesting statistic for you.
Wasn't the ref, it was
exactly.
The VAR.
When a referee heads to the VAR monitor, this is true. This 95% of the time the decision gets overturned. And
I only know a few myself.
Yeah, exactly. Usually when the referee goes to view the monitor, they still stand. They still stand with their decision, or it gets overturned. Whereas Mike Dean, I mean, you could question, Mike Dean is a big personality. Mm-hmm. He probably didn't want to look like he's not done his job properly. I think that might have had some form of contribution to the, you know, end result of the decision where he actually did get sent off and the penalty was given. But as an Arsenal fan, if Bednarak's red card's been overturned, why is Louise's not been? That's my personal opinion. I literally read that 2 minutes before we went live, that Louise's decision hadn't been overturned. And I wasn't going to mention it because I'm trying not to get angry about it. But if you're going to... VAR was brought in for consistency, and I don't think any fans are seeing consistency at this moment in time. But then that again, I read something yesterday. You know, they don't have a problem with VAR in Serie A. They don't have a problem with it in the La Liga. They don't have a problem in Ligue 1. They didn't have a problem at the World Cup. So why is it such a big issue in England? And surely that leads towards, it's not the VAR that's the problem, it's the officials that are overlooking it.
Yeah, 100%. Now, whilst we're discussing this, let's get into some hard stats.
Yeah.
Because we're going to divide this episode into two. So let's talk about the stats with Mourinho.
Yeah, so when we're talking of the Premier League managers at the moment, Mourinho is probably one of the most interesting. Now, you only need to Wikipedia Mourinho, and you can see that he's done some fantastic work almost wherever he's gone. He's always won silverware. Now, when he was at Man United, he was in charge for 144 official Premier League games. Okay, well, sorry, not just Premier League, that was included with everything. Out of those 144 games, he won 84 of them. He lost 29 and he drew 31, with an average points per game of 1.97, which is good. It's very good. It is what you would expect from a top four manager. His win percentage at Man United was 58.33%. Now, you've got to remember, in that time, he did deliver the Europa League, and I do believe that the Europa League is kind of looked over nowadays, because it is, you know, people look at it and they go, well, it's not the Champions League. Yeah. You've not got your Bayern Munich, you've not got your Barcelona's, you've not got your Real Madrid's, you know. But if you, I mean, you've been watching it this season the same as me, Jay, because obviously our teams are in there at the moment. With the group stages, we don't really count, you know, you do play the minnows. But as you get into the latter stages of the competition, you're playing some seriously good teams. You know, you're not playing Division 2 Belgian sides. You are playing teams like Valencia, Seville. You could even be playing AC Milan. And then you've got the dropout. I mean, don't forget, Atletico Madrid won the competition a few seasons ago after dropping out of the Champions League.
Yeah.
You know, these are not teams that you can put your reserves out against. And I think Mourinho did really, really well at Man United. And at Spurs, he's played just over half what he's played at Man United. So at Spurs, he's played 69 games. He's won 37. He's drawn 15. He's lost 17, with an average points of 1.83 and a win percentage of 53.62. Now, if you're talking just over half, I know he played more at Man United, which is why, you know, the stats look considerably better. If you're talking in a percentage margin, but you only need to work, sort of look at those stats right there, and you can see that Mourinho is on course to actually bettering his Man United record than what he's done at Spurs, which to me indicates that Tottenham could well have a much needed trophy on the way.
Right, I would normally agree, but the dip in form has been atrocious, absolutely shocking. In the Prem, I'm very, very worried about what's going to happen. I saw an article this morning that's very, very good source saying that if we get a bid for 100 million for Kane, he's gone. And I truly believe that we'll probably accept that as well. But actually, we took a loan out. You was talking yesterday about Spurs. Now, what people don't realise is Spurs are actually, especially across the stadium, we're in debt. Mourinho wanted some players. Yeah. We had to get a loan of over 100 million for that. We can't, if someone puts $100 million bid in or 50, that's going. That's going to be accepted no matter what. We really need the money. Now, the problem is we've got no depth though as well. We're trying to get depth, but our defence, we're so top heavy, we've missed leg day. That's the problem.
I think the issue with Spurs at the moment is, and it's, you tend to find this with Mourinho's teams. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, Mourinho's tactics are outdated. They're not, because
they are.
I don't think they are, you see, because everybody's known Mourinho for, you know, part of the ball's counter-attack football. And Arteta has done that against bigger teams, not bigger than Spurs, but he's done that against the bigger teams, you know, the Liverpools, your Cities, your Chelsea. We touched on it yesterday. And it worked. It really did work.
It worked, but you can't do that against Burnley. You can't, mate. You can't. You only can do it against teams who will come at you. You only can counter attacks on who is attacking. Yeah. Now, when you're going against small clubs, it doesn't work. You need that plan B, and we have not got this a plan B like Arsenal. That is why we're neck and neck in the league, because we're both shy.
It's funny because, you know, when obviously Brighton beat Spurs this weekend, Graham Potter, years ago when Mourinho was at Madrid, he was invited to go and watch a Madrid training session to see how Mourinho worked. And he said he was incredibly impressed with the intensity. All of the players looked like they wanted to be there. They were all fighting. They were arguing. They were scrapping. They were shouting. Yeah. And Mourinho is not only a beast in training, but he's also a beast on match days. And you've got to sort of ask yourself. So if we look at the two players at Spurs at the moment who have really, really come ahead this season and pulled them through it is Heung-min Son and Harry Kane. Now, those two are Spurs' biggest names. They have the best mentality. They have the elite mentality. And I think that's why they work well under Mourinho, because Mourinho is so used to working with Cristiano Ronaldo, Karim Benzema, Luka Modric, Gareth Bale when he was in his prime. You know, all of these players are Galacticos. They have elite mentalities, and that's why it works so well for him at Madrid. In fact, at Madrid, his average points per game was 2.3. That's mental.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
There's only one other club that he was better at, and that's Porto at 2.31.
And that's even... That's crazy. Do you know when people go about Pep going, can he do it if he was Stoke manager?
No.
Probably not. But you look at Mourinho, that guy can literally get gold out of nothing.
He won.
It's well, not big gold from anyway, but you know what I mean? It's crazy. That guy can literally produce miracles.
He won the Champions League with Porto. They had some good players, don't get me wrong, but still, nobody saw that coming.
It's great.
And I'm not mocking the Primeira League here. You know, they've got some good teams. They've got Sporting Lisbon, Benfica, Porto. But you would never expect a Benfica side of today to do what Porto did in the Champions League the year that Mourinho won it. Which is why I think that one thing Mourinho hasn't had consistently at his other clubs, other than Real Madrid, is time, in my opinion. He wasn't given enough time at Man United. He was kind of given time in his stints at Chelsea, but still, when performance was dipping, Abramovich is breathing down his neck going, if you don't improve, you're gone. You are gone. You know, and that can put real pressure on the best managers in the world. So I think, I personally, I hate to say this as an Arsenal fan, I do honestly believe that if Daniel Levy and the Spurs board and the fans and the players buy into what Mourinho is trying to do, because he's only been in the job just over a year now, hasn't he? I think if everybody keeps the faith with him, I do personally believe that he will bring trophies back to the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. So it's one of them. Personally, I don't think Mourinho is done yet. I could be wrong. I could be very, very wrong. But I do personally believe...
I think you are.
Yeah.
I think you're very wrong, Will. I mean, the problem is, I understand where you're coming from, but I have to watch Spurs every game, and the football is absolutely dire. You have two acceptances. You play dire football and you win. You play attacking football, you might lose. But that's what we all accept as fans, right? So Bournemouth got relegated. They played fantastic football. It was all out. Yeah, they like Norwich as well. They did it in their own way. When you come to the Premier, you have to amend it. Now, the problem is not only are we playing dire football, but we're not getting results now. And I can't remember the last time, unlike Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, that he's turned it around. I can't remember one incident. I'm sure there is instances, guys, and fans alike, but thinking ahead, I can't remember of a time where it's been dipped. Look what happened at Manchester United. Fantastic starts, smashing it all left, right, centre. But when he started going down, he went down worse than the Titanic, worse than a hooker for a £5 bag. Yeah. You know, he went down hard, mate. You know, and I've never seen him get back up. You know,
just to be, you know, very contradicting to what I've said about Mourinho at Man United, if you look at Ollie's stats, whilst he's there, he's played 124 games, right? So he's not far off what Mourinho had. I think he's only, he's literally 20 games off of what the time that Mourinho was given. He's won 70 of them. He's drawn 25 and lost 29. Now, he's got a 56.45 win percent in 20. It's not bad at all. And if you consider that he's got 20 games on Mourinho to make up that deficit, he could be, by the end of that, when he reaches 144, he could be at 58.33% where Mourinho was, or even better. So that
58 is such a crazy stat. I mean, that's amazing. For that, I don't think people realise how bad that United team was. Fergie really fucked them up. I know people say Fergie's a great manager. We all understand it. But that team was absolutely terrible. And say people, he won the Premier League with that team and that he left Moyes with a great team. No. It's not right. It's just that Fergie's a great manager. When you have Phil Jones and Smalling at the back, you know, with Luke Shaw. And I can't remember who the right back was at the time, but I think it was Neville. It might be, I can't remember, but there was an aging squad. He had a couple of youth players in there, but all the youth was terrible. I mean, that, you know, he was that Janzuji, whatever his name is as well. He had Zaha, but Moyes had no intentions of playing him. They should have kept him. They really should have done. Van Persie didn't stay, obviously. It was a nothing team. And the problem is that they had to give a manager, even though it wasn't Mourinho, but they had to give manager time to get rid of. Because when you look at that Man United team, it had staff from the Moyes era. It had coaching staff from Van Gaal. It had scouts from Mourinho. It was just such of everything combined. And no manager had full control. And it's only just now that they've gone, you know what? We get about all the results.
Let's go.
And Ollie's going to do it in his own image. Someone had to take the dive. It happened early in the season, and then back in the last, they were having poor results. But now we're starting to finally see, that he's getting everything in his own mould. Because it had to happen at some point.
I think I speak for all football fans when I say this. I loved Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as a player. I really liked him, and from an, you know, me being an Arsenal fan, saying that about a Man United player, you probably think, what's he saying that for? But you know, as an Arsenal fan, I'm not biased. I try to not be biased. You know, I try to be as truthful as possible. And I liked Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as a player. I thought he was a bit undone too when he was at Cardiff and he got them relegated. But who could have kept Cardiff up? do you know what I mean? So I as much as I don't want to see Man United succeed, I do like seeing Ollie succeed because I think he's a cracking bloke.
Yeah, he did great at Mold as well. And Norway.
He won the league with them,
and these players, Roy Hodgson started it first, and you see that Graham Potter, people going abroad and coming back. And I think Ollie, unreally, is actually learning on the job. Unlike other managers, he's literally listening to Fergie and taking his advice, you know. Other managers are kind of going, no, I'm not going to listen to him, you know, and just...
If you think about who Ollie's got beside him every single game as well, he's got Mike Phelan, who was a loyal servant to Sir Alex Ferguson. He's got Michael Carrick, who was, in my opinion, one of the most underrated Premier League players of all time. Carrick, he was a midfielder, and a bit like, I'm not going to compare him to Mesut Ozil because they are completely different players, but because he didn't have that flash or that flair about him, people overlooked him. But if you look at the stats after Michael Carrick left Man United and retired as a player, they dipped massively because they missed him in the centre of the field. You know, and it just goes to show what an important player he was. But when you're Ollie and you've got Mike Phelan and Michael Carrick to the side of you, you know, if Ollie's ever stuck, he's not the stubborn kind of manager to say, to not speak up when he's stuck. If he's got an issue and he doesn't really know a solution, he'd go straight to Mike Phelan and say, well, what did you and Fergie do? And I think that's why it's now clicking at Man United, because you've got Fergie's one of the board members now, one of the ambassadors, I believe. I don't know the exact word for it, but Fergie's actually quite heavy involvement in the first team at the moment. Fergie has been helping them out quite a bit. He goes in the changing room before the game and has a chat with them and sits down with them. And
I don't agree with that. I know what you're saying, but I don't agree with that. That happened with Bill Shankly as well. They had to ask him to leave eventually. You know, he can't be doing stuff like that, but you should be asking for advice and getting it. Stats, by the way.
I don't think to most of the Premier League managers. We spoke a lot about Arteta yesterday, so I'm not going to go massively into him. But, for example, Arteta's Arsenal record. So he's played 62 games with Arsenal as a manager. He's got 35 wins, 10 draws and 17 losses. He's got an average point of 1.85 per game. But his win percentage is quite good. It's 56.45. Now, he's played 7 games fewer than Mourinho, and he's got a win percentage of nearly 3 points better than him. Now, that's a mental stat if you're...
That's the problem last season, though. I know what you're saying.
This season, we've got quite a few losses. You can have your opinion on Arteta, but the truth is, Jay, and you know this as well as me, stats do not lie. You know, you can argue the toss on any manager in the Premier League at any point, and you can give your opinion across, that's fine. But at the end of the day, there are stats, and stats do not lie. And Arteta, according to stats, is doing okay, but that doesn't reflect in the media.
But I think it can be... I know what you're saying, but I think they can be manipulated stats. They don't lie, but they can be manipulated, you know. I mean, I remember Arteta going, you know, look at our attacking shots and everything when they went through that poor run. And he was going, look, it just shows you we're exciting. Whilst we all know the truth was.
You are not wrong there at all. I do genuinely agree with you there. You know, you can fabricate stats. You know, you could lose 1-0 to Burnley. I know we keep using Burnley as an example, but you can lose 1-0 to Burnley with 50 shots possession. And that doesn't matter. You know, the only stat that matters is the score at the end of the game. Do you get 3 points? Do you get 1 point? Or do you get 0 points? And that's the only stat that matters. Moving on to another Premier League manager who's just recently lost his job is Frank Lampard. And
go on.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to read you his Derby stats first, because I was a bit intrigued. I was looking into this last night because I'm thinking, Lampard's been sacked, you know. I want to try and analytically work out why he's been sacked, you know. And I think to do that, we need to look at how he did at Derby. Now, bear in mind, this is a Championship side that barely made the playoffs and then eventually lost in the playoffs, okay? And they had some good loan players that season. They had some quality Premier League players. They had Harry Wilson from Liverpool. They had Mason Mount, who came in as well, didn't they? You know, they had... I can't name all of them because I'm not a Derby fan. I don't follow them that closely. But they had a good crop of players that probably should have done better than they did. Now, with Derby that season, Lampard had... not just that season, but he had 57 games with Derby. He won 26, he drew 15, and he lost 16. His win percentage at Derby County was 45.61. Wasn't even in the 50% bracket. So, to me, to hire a manager with a 45% win percentage for a Premier League club that's won league titles, that's won the Champions League, why did that happen?
Got to be desperate. I don't know. I think we touched upon it yesterday regarding... that they yes. had a transfer ban. And if they didn't have that ban, I can't... I mean, to be fair, very, very harsh criticism here, but I think they got everything they deserved. The way they treated Sarri was unreal.
Won a Europa League. He won the first trophy in his career. And then straight after that, they were like, right, okay, no, fine. You can leave now. Yeah, exactly.
Final and as well.
My feeling towards Chelsea when they hired Frank Lampard was, we're not going to be able to sign any players. So that means we're going to perform poorly. Yeah. So let's stick a guy in there who the fans won't get mad at because he's a legend. That was my feeling when they hired Lampard, because I was sort of looking at him going, he couldn't even get promotion with a good Derby side, and they've now hired him, and I think it was just to shut the fans up. Because if you think about it, if Lampard went on a poor run of games with a transfer ban, you know, all the fans were saying, oh, it's all right, you know, when he can bring players in, it'll be okay. And I think that was a bit of a gamble from Abramovich. And then as soon as there are a lot of transfers, he spends £250 million on players and was sitting, what, eighth at the table when he got sacked?
Yep. So what we're going to do with this one is we're just going to wrap it up a tiny bit early, but we're just going to have this last subject quickly, guys. And that is, do you think chairmen like Roman Abramovich, like the Glazers, do you think they sign legends, ex-players, so they can go underneath the radar and do all these terrible business decisions and get away with it because they are ex-pro players? Because I'm not being funny, but I don't think half of these managers deserve to be managers in the places they are. You're talking about, you know, you talk about black managers, for instance, as not getting recognition and getting to the highest stage. These people have had a season of two managers, like you just said, the crazy stats for Lampard, Arteta as well. You know, first manager's job at Arsenal, that's just crazy in itself.
If you look at...
So do you think that chairmen are employing managers of ex-legends to get a break,
absolutely,
to get a free excuse?
And the data in front of me completely backs up that theory. So you look at, I'll quickly wrap through this, okay? So you look at Arteta, first job at Arsenal, 56.45 win percent. Lampard, Chelsea, 52.38 win percent, You look at Ollie at Man United, 56.45. Carlo Ancelotti at Everton, I know he's not an Everton legend, but he was brought there to quiet the fans. I know it may have cost him a bit more than some of these first-time guys, but he was handed a poor squad and expected to turn it round. 51% win percentage, okay? Manchester City, It's no secret how much money their board have got. They forked out loads of money for Pep Guardiola, didn't they? So you've heard all those percentages from those, we'll not include Ancelotti in this, but from Ollie, Lampard and Arteta, you know, those okay and acceptable win percentages. Guardiola at City, do you know what his win percentage is? 74.44. And he's played nearly 200 games. He's played 198 games. And he's got a 74.44% win percentage. To me, what you've just said completely backs it up in the fact of, you know, chairmen and boards of Premier League clubs are hiring less minnow managers who have got club history and ties to shelter the fact that the club probably don't have a lot of money, or they don't want to spend a lot of money, because they know that no matter how bad the performances are on the pitch, the fans won't turn on them because of the love that they shared with them when they were a player at the club.
I believe tomorrow.
Yeah.
100%. Obviously, you're free tomorrow, right? Tomorrow we'll be discussing Pep's Man City in full detail. We did Arsenal yesterday, so tomorrow Mr. Will here will be getting some stats in full regarding the Man City. Now, is there anything you want to wrap up on quickly? We will be doing this again, guys, in a second. You'll hear the second part of this.
I tell you what,
is there anything that you wish to
a massive thank you to the fans and for everybody listening today. Like I said at the start, your support is the reason that this hard work is justified. It really does mean a lot to both of us. And I'm going to leave you, our amazing fans, with a really random fact that should put a smile on your face. So if you all remember the Ronaldo goal when he was playing for Juve and he leaped in the air and it looked like he jumped off a trampoline. Do you remember that, Jay? Yeah, so Ronaldo actually jumped up 256 centimetres off of the floor to meet that header. This weekend, a Motherwell player who played in the Scottish Premiership called Bevis Mugabe scored a goal with his head, and he actually jumped up 262 centimetres, which is 8 centimetres higher than Ronaldo did. So there's a random fact for you, Bevis Mugabe.
What a great start that is. Right, guys, thank you very much for the TNA Ball podcast. Goodbye from myself. And see you in part two, guys. Thank you.